Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Explosions and gunfire. Israel continues its offensive in southern Gaza amid discussions over a possible ceasefire. We have analysis. Cleared out. Police make a late-night move against a pro-Palestinian protest in the nation's capital. Office space. Catholic Charities of Pittsburgh launches an initiative for the homeless. And getting our hopes up. Pope Francis reminds the faithful of the power of one simple virtue. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. We begin with the latest developments in the war between Israel and Hamas. The defense secretary confirmed in a Senate hearing today that the United States is pumping the brakes on a shipment of bombs to Israel.
Again, as we have assessed the situation, we paused one shipment of high payload munitions. And again, I think we've also been very clear about the steps that we'd like to see Israel take to account for and take care of those civilians before major combat takes place. We certainly would like to see no major combat take place in Rafah.
But there is a great deal of conflict in Rafah as the Israeli Defense Forces push their military offensive forward. An airstrike killed several Palestinians, including children, earlier today. Israel says Rafah is the last stronghold for Hamas and a wider offensive is needed to dismantle the terror group. But for more, let's bring in John Gamble, that is, Associated Press News Director for the Gulf and Iran. John, great to be with you again. As we mentioned, the Defense Secretary confirmed today that the U.S. paused a large shipment of bombs. Has there been any reaction from the Israeli government to this?
Well, as of right now, the Israelis are being very careful about how they respond to the U.S. The U.S. has been their main ally throughout this whole war that's now 7 months old. And President Biden in particular has really been looked at by the Israeli government as a staunch ally, particularly as you see Europe and other nations really start to raise alarm and concern over the death toll in the Gaza Strip, which is now over 34,000 Palestinians killed since that October 7th attack that saw Hamas come over the border into Israel and kill 1,200 people. Now, they want to continue to make sure that U.S.-Israeli relationship remains tight, but the fact that they've stopped this shipment of bombs is sort of a warning sign for the Netanyahu government that's pretty hard line that the Biden administration remains concerned about its actions with Rafah.
And John, the Israeli military says that it has reopened the Kerem Shalom crossing into Gaza, but a United Nations agency says that no aid has yet entered there. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, this has been the crossing that we saw where a couple of days ago there was a Hamas attack that killed four Israeli soldiers there. The Israelis responded by shutting that crossing. That crossing, along with Rafah, remains the two key crossings for aid to get into the Gaza Strip. There's a lot of talk about the floating pier that the U.S. military is building. That's still not in position yet. The other crossings are not open. So really, in order to get the food and the water and the other medicine and aid that is needed for Gaza, it's got to go through either one of these two crossings. Rafah is obviously still closed after the Israelis yesterday stormed in there with a tank brigade and took it. Now, the Israelis are insisting that Kerem Shalom is open, but UN officials and others are saying that it's still pretty dangerous over there. There was some crossfire even today, and that they're still not able to get that needed aid in, but there's a lot of pressure to try to get that open, Tracy.
And John, is there any indication that a large-scale incursion is ready to happen? Do you know?
That's still sort of the million-dollar question in this conflict. The Israeli government with Prime Minister Netanyahu, the hardliners that are around him, continue to insist that they will go into Rafah. They say there are four battalions of Hamas militants still there that they want to try to take out, as well as senior leadership and those hostages. However, the United States, others in the European Union, and the wider international community are warning that those over 1 million civilians that are believed to be crowded into Rafah are at risk. They're trying to tell people to flee northward, but some say they're going to remain. The UN main agency for the Palestinians say it's going to remain. And as of right now, with these ceasefire negotiations still kind of on a knife's edge, it remains unclear if the Israelis will do it. But as of right now, Tracy, they're still certainly threatening to do it.
John Gambrel reporting for us tonight. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Police in riot gear descended upon the George Washington University campus early this morning, clearing away the pro-Palestinian encampment. It came just hours before Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and the city's police chief were scheduled to testify before lawmakers. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has more.
Good evening, Tracy. As you can see behind me, the university yard has been cleared here on the campus of George Washington University, and police have actually set up a barrier to prevent any further protests from taking place. A much different scene from hours ago, early this morning, when police arrested 33 people. Around 3:30 Wednesday morning, hundreds of D.C. Metropolitan Police officers in riot gear descended on H Street.
Water! Give me water!
Water! Who's got water?
Water!
Water! Thank you, thank you.
Several protesters cried out for water after being pepper sprayed by police. Police say those arrested are being charged with assault on police officers. Now that the encampment has been cleared, an oversight committee hearing in which the mayor was supposed to testify has now been canceled. But another hearing took place today before the Education Committee here on Capitol Hill, taking a look at anti-Semitism in public schools. Prior to the hearing, lawmakers tell me Congress must play a role.
We have to stamp out anti-Semitism right now. If you think about what happened in the 1920s and 30s, you cannot wait. You cannot wait for this to metastasize into something even more evil than what we're seeing today.
All of a sudden, when we hold people accountable and we're going to bring people in for hearings, all of a sudden the encampments disappear. That's a good thing.
Former school nurse Mary Beth Tinker, who brought a free speech case before the U.S. Supreme Court over 50 years ago, says the justices agreed teachers, students, and all staff have the right to speak their minds.
So now students are speaking up again. And teachers are being criticized for being anti-Semitic. It is not anti-Semitic to criticize the policies of Israel or the policies of the United States.
During the hearing, educators defended their record on anti-Semitism.
Anti-Semitism has no place in Montgomery County Public Schools. The suffering caused by anti-Semitism, hate, and racism interferes with students' learning and well-being.
But lawmakers say no one is being held accountable.
We have taken action in some cases. We put them.
You've gotten rid of teachers. You said, you know, they don't belong in Montgomery County schools. You're teaching hatred, and we're going to get rid of you. Has that happened?
We have taken disciplinary action, yes.
Have you fired anybody?
No.
And leaders of the three large public school systems told the congressional panel that they're fighting anti-Semitism with education, and when necessary, they will use discipline. They continue to reject accusations that they have allowed hate to continue and go unchecked in their schools. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Two key issues surface on the presidential campaign trail today: abortion and the economy. Vice President Kamala Harris makes a trip to Pennsylvania to promote abortion, while President Biden travels to the Midwest to promote jobs. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. Today, President Joe Biden flew to Racine, Wisconsin, where Microsoft is building a $3.3 billion AI data center, creating jobs. The president hopes that will translate into votes come this November in a state where four of the past six presidential elections have been decided by less than a percentage point.
President Joe Biden leaves Washington, D.C. to hit the campaign trail, not stopping to talk to reporters. His destination, Racine, Wisconsin. That's where former President Donald Trump lauded a plan by Taiwan-based electronics giant Foxconn to build a $10 billion manufacturing facility that was supposed to eventually employ 10,000 people, except it was never completed. Now Biden says Microsoft will help fill that void.
It's all part of Microsoft's broad plan to build an artificial intelligence ecosystem right here in Racine. And it's going to be transformative, not just here, but worldwide.
President trying to convince voters in the crucial swing state where polls show a tight race that his economic policies are better.
My Investing in America agenda is fueling historic boom in rebuilding our roads and bridges, developing and deploying clean energy, revitalizing American manufacturing, and so much more.
Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris travels to another swing state, Pennsylvania, continuing her push for abortion.
Do you not trust women? To know what is in their own best interest? You, some legislator in some state capital, the majority of whom are not women?
The vice president will also hammer home the issue in D.C. tonight when she speaks to members of the pro-abortion group Emily's List. Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, pushes back.
We want to protect the unborn. We want to support their moms.
SBA's Katie Glenn Daniel earlier told us she wishes President Biden would follow his faith.
Look at what the Catholic Church, of which we are both members, says about this issue. Our church could not be more clear that every single child's life is worth living.
Now back to that president's, to the president's trip in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin's recent presidential primary, 18,000 more Republicans than Democrats voted. Meanwhile, President Biden's top contender for the Oval Office, Donald Trump, who won Racine County back in 2020, will see his trial in New York resume tomorrow. The former president was back in Florida on his day off from that trial, the first of his four criminal cases to reach a jury. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And from the White House to former President Trump's legal battles, the Georgia Appeals Court has agreed to review whether Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis can still prosecute the election interference case against Trump. Lawyers for the former president say that Willis's relationship with a special prosecutor created a conflict of interest. A judge in March ruled that Willis could stay on the case only if the special prosecutor left. The appeals court's decision to review the case could likely cause yet another delay. The case has already endured several setbacks. All right, now to Kyiv, where Russian forces carried out a massive attack on Ukraine's energy infrastructure. Ukrainian authorities say more than 50 cruise missiles and explosive drones hit power facilities in seven regions. The blast also damaged homes and the country's rail network, injuring at least five people. Well, since the invasion of Ukraine, Russia has faced a number of sanctions from the U.S. and other Western nations. Today, Britain's Home Security Secretary announced a major package of measures to target and dismantle Russian intelligence gathering operations in the U.K. That includes expelling the Russian defense attaché, an undeclared military intelligence officer. It also removes special diplomatic status from several Russian-owned properties, which the government believes have been used for intelligence purposes.
Russia has failed to provide any explanation for these events. In the coming days, we should expect accusations of Russophobia, conspiracy theories, and hysteria from the Russian government. This is not new, and the British people and the British government will not fall for it and will not be taken for fools by Putin's bots, trolls, and lackeys.
China and Serbia have signed an agreement to build a so-called shared future. Chinese President Xi Jinping says that Serbia is the first European country to build a community of destiny with the communist nation. Serbia's president described Xi as an ironclad friend. Beijing has poured billions of dollars into Serbia in investment and loans. This comes as Serbia seeks membership in the European Union. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including search and rescue, an update on the deadly floods in Brazil, and why the state of Florida filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration. Dozens are dead and more than 100 missing following major flooding in Brazil. A major city in the southern part of the country is under a water rationing decree. This as the majority of the population is without running water. Rescue efforts are underway to rescue those stranded by the floodwaters. Public health experts are also warning of the danger of bacteria and disease spreading. Well, back here in the United States, the Midwest is facing severe storms as tornadoes struck a Michigan city, destroying homes and a FedEx facility. Twisters knocked out power for more than 20,000 people in southwestern Michigan. Every employee at the FedEx facility are safe. This after around 50 people were trapped inside due to down power lines. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer declared a state of emergency in four counties. Well, the state of Florida is suing the Biden administration over new federal laws on gender-based surgeries. State Attorney General Ashley Moody says insurers should not have to cover transgender surgeries and medical procedures. She says that it is an attempt by the White House to force Florida to pay for puberty blockers and other so-called gender-affirming care. Several parties joined the lawsuit, including the Catholic Medical Association. And joining us now to talk more about this is Dr. Gracie Pozzo Christi, a radiologist, senior fellow for the Catholic Association and host of the nationally syndicated radio show Conversations with Consequences on EWTN Radio. Dr. Christi, great to be with you as always. So tell us more about this change to federal law that sparked the lawsuit and how it will affect Catholic hospitals and healthcare professionals and also their conscious rights.
Well, I'm a doctor in Florida and also a member of the Catholic Medical Association, and I saw this move by the Biden administration and was very scared and upset. It goes along with the recent Title IX rewrite of the administration, and it is a way for the federal administration to shoehorn the United States into all these dangerous ideologies around gender. This particular one is rewriting the part of the Affordable Care Act so that a doctor who might be Catholic, but not necessarily so, just an ethical doctor, who refuses to remove the healthy organ, such as a uterus, from a woman because it is a healthy organ and he doesn't or she doesn't believe that it's a proper medical and ethical treatment for something like gender dysphoria, would have to remove the organ or be said to be discriminatory. This is especially egregious in the case of children. And in Florida, we have, as in many other states, 20 states, I think, we have laws protecting minors from the terrible assault of gender ideology, which using puberty blockers and surgeries can render and do render minors when they grow up infertile and sometimes mutilated. So this is trying to do an end run against protective laws that are very popular, especially with parents.
Yeah, Dr. Christi, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that and the timing of this, especially, you know, when other countries such as Sweden, Norway, and the UK, they're taking more of a conservative approach to so-called gender-affirming care and kind of pumping the brakes on prescribing things like puberty blockers. So why are we pushing forward here in the U.S.?
So it's really important to note that in other countries, such as the UK and Sweden, as you mentioned, they're taking a science-based approach, and they're looking at the statistics and the results of many years of experimentation on children, which hasn't resulted in better outcomes, better psychological outcomes for children with gender dysphoria. On the contrary, they seem to be locked into suicidal ideation and dysphoria and discomfort with their bodies. When now we know that most children grow out of gender dysphoria if they're given just supportive psychotherapy, for instance, and helped to accept the beauty of their natural bodies and their natural biology. So the United States, at least the federal administration, is running hard in the other direction. And I think that they're going to be really sorry because they're really participating in what is going to turn out to be, we're all going to realize that it was a giant experiment on children, medical malpractice on a huge scale. And in Florida and in many other states, we are protecting children with our laws. And this rewrite of the Affordable Care Act is doing an end run against those protections.
Well, Dr. Christi, always great to have you on and get your insights. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Divine Office. Catholic Charities of Pittsburgh unveils a new initiative to use a vacant building to help the homeless. Plus, a hopeful reminder from Pope Francis. The office building is about to become a beacon of hope for the homeless and disadvantaged in downtown Pittsburgh. Catholic Charities of Pittsburgh is launching its Compassion Corner initiative, which will transform a vacant 45,000 square foot building into a center for health care and mental health services, job training and meal programs, and a variety of other resources. Here with more on this is Susan Rauscher, the Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Pittsburgh. Susan, great to be with you today. So explain to us, you know, how this program began and the need in Pittsburgh for such a facility.
So this is an extension of work that we've been doing for a whole lot of years. But about 10 years ago, Our board and our leadership team started to talk about what did successful impact really look like. We were seeing a lot of cyclical returning for services and need. So we really started to talk about what's it look like if you've really made a difference. And that people are sustained. They become stronger, more stable at the end of their time with us. And so we started to really rework all of our programming and outreach away from just transactional assistance and into more relational type casework solutions. And this is an extension of that.
Yeah. And talk to us, Susan, about the collaboration with local officials and also your reaction to the mayor saying that Christians can't just read and teach the Bible, but need to show their faith through works and deeds. What did you think about that?
I was really energized by it, and I was really feeling connected and linked in and synced with this idea of really stepping into the areas of assistance and not just paying it lip service. I think it's really important that we come up with solutions that indeed end up being solutions at the end of the day. Ideally, success looks like somebody who moves out of a situation, regardless of how they ended up there, trauma or bad choices or circumstances, to be able to get them to be able to stand wholly as a human being and see that, you know, they're a child of God, loved by God, but also loved by all of their neighbors and fellow human beings.
Yeah, definitely. I know since the pandemic, that is, we've heard, you know, so much about transforming empty spaces in inner cities to help those experiencing homelessness. Is your project, is that sort of a blueprint? Were you thinking about that?
So we have a number of outreaches. The idea very significantly is to not duplicate services that aren't needed, but to put in place services that are needed in order to maximize what already exists. We are collaborating with an organization that is called Gift of Mary that is doing quick emergency transitional 2 weeks or so, transitional housing, emergency housing shelter for women who are abused on the street, and to get them to the next step. Whatever that is, to get them out of danger. All of those pieces, as you start to put together feeding people who are on the street, helping them find solutions to the issues that put them on the street in the first place or keeping them on the street, shelter out of harm's way, shelter from the elements, you start putting those pieces together and people can start to find solutions at the end of the day.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about all this. Thank you for all the good works that you do. God bless you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Pope Francis says that the world needs hope.
Andiamo avanti e chiediamo la grazia di avere la speranza.
As weekly talk at the Vatican, the Holy Father calls hope a gift directly from God, and it will help us get through the darkest nights. He also says the absence of hope almost always leads to sadness. Artists from around the world are taking part in a unique exhibition at the Vatican. It features 24 images that are paired with verses written by St. Francis of Assisi from his Canticle of the Creatures. EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief Andreas Tannhauser has more.
My purpose is sharing God's creation, as you see in the image behind me, sharing his love and light. My picture evokes light and evokes emotion of peace and love, and that's what we're trying to evoke is changes in our planet, in our attitudes, and that's what I'm here for, to advocate through photography.
That is Francesca Lorraine. She's one of 9 photographers whose work is on display at the exhibition called Changes. Hosted by the Vatican, the pieces are located under the colonnade of St. Peter's Square throughout the month of May.
It's a laboratory to bring art and faith together so that emotions that come through art can generate a change, that they can really drive to a personal change and a social change.
The exhibition is comprised of 24 photographs taken by artists from various countries. These images depict the contrast between the beauty of creation and the destruction caused by climate change and how it affects our common home as well as populations worldwide. In an interview with EWTN News Nightly, Leah Beltrami, one of the curators of the exhibition, explained how the photographs were selected.
We do a long work together with many photographers, trying really to build together a project. And then we select choosing especially photographers from the peripheries so that the peripheries can be taken into the center. And then we have a group, a big group. We selected among about 2,000 photographs. And together with the Dicastery for Communication and Dicastery for Integral Development, we decided which one. And Mariana picked the final ones.
As Mariana Beltrami explained to EWTN News Nightly, the combination of the words from the Canticle of the Creatures by St. Francis of Assisi and the photographs can show how art can address significant issues. For instance, climate change, which is a central theme in Pope Francis's pontificate.
As artists, this is our contribution, one of our many contributions, and we think that the power of pictures in a world where communication is so overstimulating and so quick and so fast-paced, having one picture that may seem static can tell you a lot more about the world. And also, as part of our project, it can generate certain kinds of emotions that can really motivate you to do your part. So this is our contribution as artists, and we're very glad to be able to do that.
In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.